This audio recording is a resource from the Center for Bioethical Reform, CBR. This and other resources can be found at www.abortionno.org. This essay is by Greg Cunningham, Executive Director of CBR, read by CBR staff, April 2010. Dear pro-life supporter, on February 10, 2010, we received an email message from a 15-year-old girl from Hoffman Estates, Illinois. She wrote to say she had never seen an abortion, but she found our website because I'm thinking about having an abortion. Because she included her email address in our survey form, my wife Lois immediately sent her a reply and offered local help to protect her baby from those wanting to kill the child. In John 10:37-38, Jesus exhorted unbelievers to believe because of what you see. Seeing abortion may be what it takes to make a believer of this Illinois teenager. This is why CBR invests so heavily in reaching students whose teachers are systematically denying them this and other vital truth. On May 13, 2010, NYTimes.com published a story headlined, Citing Individualism, Arizona Tries to Rein in Ethnic Studies in School. It described a new Arizona law which would impose a 10% funding penalty on any local school which offers classes designed primarily for students of particular ethnic groups, advocates ethnic solidarity, or promotes resentment of a race or a class of people. Tom Horn, the state superintendent of public instruction, says, they are teaching a radical ideology in Raza, including that Arizona and other states were stolen from Mexico and should be given back. Liberals disagree. Judy Burns, president of the governing board of the Tucson schools, said the district's ethnic studies courses empower kids to take charge of their own destiny, gain a sense of the value of their own existence, and become more determined to be well-educated, contributing members of society. These kids may be gaining a sense of their own value, but the fact that precious classroom time is being wasted on racist propaganda may be why PewHispanic.org reports that Hispanic students are notably behind their white counterparts in the core academic skills. Although the precise size of the gap depends on the subject area, age or grade, and the assessment, by all measures, a significant gap in mathematics, reading skills, and science exists between Hispanic and white students. Of perhaps even greater concern for our country, the Goldwater Institute issued a press release June 30, 2009, titled Arizona High Schools Get an F in Civics. The release cited a survey finding that only 3.5% of Arizona public high school students could pass a U.S. citizenship test. Our hearts break for these Latino students. Their teachers are lying to them and cheating them, and the result is an abortion rate for Hispanic women which, in 2004, was 28 abortions per every 1,000 women, compared with 11 out of every 1,000 white women. The Manchester Union Leader published a story January 16, 2007, which cited a study conducted by the National Center for Policy Analysis, which concluded that not only do American high schools fail to educate students about U.S. history and civics, but by the time many students finish college, they know even less. In fact, the Chronicle of Higher Education reported a similarly alarming study in a story headlined, College Makes Students More Liberal But Not Smarter About Civics, May 26, 2010. This may be why a 2008 study by the Intercollegiate Studies Institute found shocking failure rates when a random representative sample of 2,508 American adults was surveyed to allow civics knowledge comparisons between those with and without college degrees. Respondents were asked 33 questions, many drawn from U.S. naturalization exams and U.S. Department of Education high school progress tests, NAEP. The results? 71% of Americans failed this basic test. The study also found that civic knowledge increases a person's regard for America's ideals and free institutions, and that politicians are less well-grounded in basic American civics than the public in general. CNSNews.com, Americans Know American Idol Star Better Than American History, November 21, 2008. Barack Obama is getting away with a socialist takeover of our government because we slept through a socialist takeover of our schools. Socialism always means abortion, but huge numbers of Americans don't even know what socialism is. Evidence of this appalling ignorance can be found in a Rasmussen Reports publication which disclosed on April 9, 2009 that only 53% of American adults believe capitalism is better than socialism. Fully 27% aren't sure which is better. Only 39% of Democrats believe that capitalism is better than socialism. Nor is this trend line moving in the right direction. A similar Rasmussen survey in 2008 found that 70% of U.S. voters say a free market is better than one managed by the government. That is a huge drop in confidence in free enterprise over only 2 years, especially when the recession which contributed to that erosion of trust was caused largely by the government's corrupt and inept interference in the private housing market. Reuters.com reported a May 1, 2010 story headlined, "Obama Defends Government Power Ahead of Elections." Mr. Obama, delivering the commencement address at the University of Michigan, said, "Throwing around phrases like socialist and Soviet-style takeover and fascist and right-wing nut, that may grab headlines, but it also has the effect of comparing our government, our political opponents, to authoritarian, even murderous regimes. Of course, Mr. Obama's regime is socialist, and it has launched a Soviet-style takeover of the private sector, and it is clearly murderous, at least where preborn children are concerned. Unlimited access to abortion is a basic element of health care in every socialist economy in the world, now including ours. To fight socialism is to fight abortion. And Mr. Obama is a socialist to the core of his being." In a January 18, 2001 radio interview on a program called Odyssey, Chicago Public Radio, WBEZ 91.5 FM, reported at abcnews.com, Political Punch, October 27, 2008, he famously criticized the Supreme Court for not being radical enough in its treatment of the issues of redistribution of wealth and economic justice. He criticized the Supreme Court because it didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution. He criticized the idea that the Constitution should be seen as a charter of negative liberties, which says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, instead of what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. He personalized his contempt for the Constitution and the court it created by adding that the right for him, as a black man, to be able to sit at a lunch counter and order would be okay, but only as long as I could pay for it. The implication was that if he couldn't pay for it, someone else should buy him a free lunch. He finished the interview by lamenting that, "Maybe I'm showing my bias here as a legislator as well as a law professor," Obama said. "I'm not optimistic about bringing about major redistributive change through the courts. The institution just isn't structured that way." Being smarter than the Founding Fathers, he is determined to correct their error. AmericanThinker.com, February 12, 2010, ran a piece titled, "Why Obama Can't Drop Healthcare Reform." It said, "What the GOP fails to realize is that President Obama is fighting so hard on health care reform because the issue for him is finishing the work of Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement." The American Thinker article cites another essay at fair.org, "The Martin Luther King You Don't See on TV," January 4, 1995. It says, "After passage of Civil Rights Acts in 1964 and 1965, King began challenging the nation's fundamental priorities. Therefore, noting that a majority of Americans below the poverty line were white, King developed a class perspective. He decried the huge income gaps between rich and poor and called for radical changes in the structure of our society to redistribute wealth and power. American Thinker also cites a piece which appears in LipMagazine.org, No Small Dreams, January 20, 2003. As King told journalist Dave Halberstam, "For years I labored with the idea of reforming the existing institutions of the society, a little change here, a little change there. Now I feel quite differently. I think you've got to have a reconstruction of the entire society, a revolution of values." American Thinker closes by observing that, through health care reform, Obama will attempt to finish the job of applying positive liberties, what the government can do for you, ultimately attempting to forsake the Constitution, which is a charter of negative liberties, what the government cannot do to you, to apply the final judgment of the civil rights movement. The cost of redistributing wealth will cripple our economy as it is crippling Europe's. National Review Online posted a piece titled "The Canary in Europe's Coal Mine," May 7, 2010. It details the collapse of the Greek economy, whose disintegration threatens to take down all of Western Europe. Barack Obama is committed to transforming America into Europe, both politically and economically. But this article says, "The most debilitating disease afflicting Greece is also present in every other Western European country. They all have more and more people living off of an expansive social welfare structure, even as their workforce is aging, shrinking, and losing ground to global competitors." Bravo, says Barack. NYTimes.com carried a May 22, 2010 story headlined, "Payback Time. Deficit crisis threatens ample benefits of European life." It said, "Across Western Europe, the lifestyle superpower, the assumptions and gains of a lifetime are suddenly in doubt." With a sober warning for Europe, the article says, "The deficit crisis that threatens the euro has also undermined the sustainability of the European standard of social welfare, built by left-leaning governments since the end of World War II. With a reference to the rioting among welfare recipients and government workers, the story reports that the reaction so far to government efforts to cut spending has been pessimism and anger, with an understanding that the current system is unsustainable. But Europeans want America to help them to sustain it." TheHill.com ran an article May 6, 2010 titled, "GOP Continues Effort to Thwart EU Bailouts." It describes the efforts of Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican, Washington, to stop the U.S. from bailing out Spain, the next euro domino poised to fall. Economists fear Portugal and Italy soon could follow. She says, "The U.S. did not implement the policies that have caused Spain's debt issue, and the U.S. taxpayer should not be put at risk to bail them out. But the fact is that Barack Obama is implementing in the U.S. the same policies which caused Spain's debt issues. U.S. taxpayers are being forced to bail out foreign socialists, but at the same time we are being forced to bail out domestic socialists." Senator Jim DeMint, Republican, South Carolina, May 6, 2010, DailyCaller.com, said that 17% of the IMF funding pool that the $40 billion bailout is being drawn from comes from U.S. taxpayers. If that ratio holds true, that means American taxpayers are paying for $6.8 billion of the Greek bailout. U.S. taxpayers get to pay for American abortions and European abortions, too. Michael Barone, in the WashingtonExaminer.com, January 9, 2010, posted a column titled, "Damn the Deficit, Full Speed Ahead on Healthcare." It cites a Scott Winship blog which notes in the Progressive Policy Institute's ProgressiveFix.com blog that federal spending is on course to exceed 40% of GDP because of scheduled spending on entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, within the lifetime of today's children. Then the punchline. Just as Ronald Reagan hoped that cutting taxes would force politicians to cut spending, these Democrats hope that increasing spending will force politicians to increase taxes to levels common in Western Europe. Never mind that those economies have proved more sluggish and less creative than ours over the long haul. And never mind that they are now on the brink of collapse. Newsweek magazine, December 7, 2009, featured a cover story titled, How Great Powers Fall. It said that if the United States doesn't come up with a credible plan to balance the budget, the danger is a major weakening of American power. More to the point, according to the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, a significant decline in the relative share of national security in the federal budget is already baked into the cake. On the Pentagon's present plan, defense spending is set to fall from above 4% now to 3.2% of GDP in 2015 and to 2.6% of GDP by 2028. The writer adds that, over the long run to 2039, spending on healthcare rises from 16% to 33% of GDP. But spending on everything other than healthcare, Social Security, and interest payments drops from 12% to 8.4%. Profligacy threatens our national security. This is how empires decline. It begins with a debt explosion. It ends with an inexorable reduction in the resources available for the Army, Navy, and Air Force. But not everyone is as dumb as we Westerners. Victor Davis Hanson, in a post titled 2010, Our Year of Decision, at RealClearPolitics.com, says, Meanwhile, the cash-flushed Chinese have not been idle. This year they will continue to use their vast budget surplus to expand their armed forces, as skyrocketing debts in the years ahead force us to curtail our own. The result? With America engaged in two wars and drowning in trillions in debt, our Asian allies are already starting to take their respective measures of Barack Obama and the communist cadre in Beijing. Expect allies like Japan, Philippines, South Korea, and Taiwan to begin to make regional accommodations with a rising China, while distancing themselves from a floundering and confused U.S. But the permanent Obama recession is not only reducing our ability to defend our nation, it is shrinking our pro-life donor base and reducing our ability to fight abortion. The poverty Mr. Obama's socialist revolution is creating is also increasing the abortion rate. A blog at WashingtonPost.com, May 5, 2010, posted a story titled, Has the Recession Affected Abortion? The answer is, the percentage of women getting abortions who have incomes below the federal poverty line increased from 27% in 2000 to 42% in 2008, an increase of almost 60%, according to the new analysis by the Guttmacher Institute. NewYorkTimes.com, May 18, 2009, in their weekly magazine, ran a story titled More Abortions in a Recession, which quoted an AP story, Planned Parenthood of Illinois clinics performed an all-time high number of abortions in January, many of them motivated by the women's economic worries. It adds, abortions at Planned Parenthood's St. Louis area clinics were up nearly 7% in the second half of 2008 from a year earlier, ending a stretch in which the numbers were dwindling. The article also notes that the National Network of Abortion Funds, which helps women in need pay for abortions, said calls to the network's national helpline have nearly quadrupled from a year ago. USNews.com, April 1, 2009, carried a column by Bonnie Erb titled, In a Recession, Abortions Are Not a Bad Choice. She is dead wrong. Our abortion photos prove abortions are a bad choice for the babies. That is why CBR is fighting Mr. Obama and his attempts to ruin our economy, drive up our abortion rates, shrink our pro-life donor base, dumb down our schools, open up our borders, weaken our military, erode our First Amendment rights, and turn Washington into Chicago and America into Europe. We know how to push back the evil movement this man leads, but we need the resources to effectively fund and staff our proven projects. Thank you for doing your part to help. Lord bless. Greg Cunningham, Executive Director. P.S. On May 22, 2010, a 23-year-old woman from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, wrote to say she had seen our website abortion photos and thanked us for making it possible for her to share with others our photos because her friend is thinking about getting an abortion. Please pray for her friend's baby and thank God that we could be there for her because you are here for us. This concludes the recording of Greg Cunningham's letter of April 2010. For more information on this and other topics, go to www.abortionknow.org.